All this week, we've been hearing what it's like being gay in Iowa in our series by IPR's Rob Dillard. This hour, to bring the series to a close, we'll talk with four Iowans with unique perspectives. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this is River to River. We'll talk with Des Moines businessman, gay rights activist, and former Republican congressional candidate Rich Eichner. Also, Des Moines attorney Sharon Malero of One Iowa, Nate Munson, executive director of Iowa Safe Schools, and Kate Varnum, one of the plaintiffs in the Iowa Supreme Court case which paved the way for same-sex marriage in Iowa. Being gay in Iowa, right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. And as you, many of you know, all this week, Iowa Public Radio has been continuing its series, Being in Iowa, with reports about being gay in Iowa. Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard has talked with Iowans about the sometimes difficult process of coming to terms with being gay and sharing that news with family and friends.
Dana Stewing already knew quite a bit about the lives of gays, so it was relatively easy to come out to her family back in Pennsylvania.
My aunt is a lesbian, and she and her partner have long been a full and complete members of my family, and so it wasn't a big deal when I came out.
But many more closeted gays are like Leslie Gerhardt, co-owner of a property management firm in Des Moines. She came out in her mid-20s, but had considered her sexual orientation for years before coming to terms with it.
You know, I just was afraid to be labeled a lesbian. When I first came out, I couldn't even say the word lesbian.
In the case of Gerhardt's spouse, Lisa Deaton, it took an intervention from her mother when she was also in her mid-20s before she could talk about being gay.
And she said, I know why you're crying. I know why you're upset. And so she told me, she said, you know, I think you're gay and that you're struggling with that. And that wasn't an easy conversation for her because, you know, she was struggling with it too.
Deaton says the first conversation a gay person has when coming out is not the last one on the subject. Going publicly gay is a lifelong process, she says. The topic comes up time and time again as she meets new people or starts new jobs. It's a conversation she's had hundreds of times and is likely to have hundreds of times more.
Rob Dillard also spoke with Iowans about the consequences that can result from coming out, bullying.
18-year-old Stephen Boatwright has been openly gay since he was in eighth grade. He says it hasn't always been easy.
I've been walking home from school and I've been attacked by a fellow student because he knew that I was gay. I actually have an allergy to adhesives, and I've had glue smeared on my locker so that I can't open my locker anymore.
And Rob talked with the children of gay couples about how their parents' sexuality impacted their lives.
The case of Julie Shanky Lyford is entirely different. Her father, Bob, came out to her as gay when she was a senior at Pella High School. She says her dad, a theater professor at Central College at the time, expected her to reject him when he sprung the news. She says it took a while to convince him it didn't change her love for him. She really didn't care.
Don't get me wrong, there was times when I had to deal with the situation that I got quite ticked, that I had to deal with it. But I never hated him. I hated having to deal with the drama.
At first she was asked to sit on the information, but she told a few people who she considered friends and lost them as a result. It cost her some boyfriends along the way, too. One told her if they ever had children together, the kids would not be permitted to be alone with their grandfather.
What I started doing is pre-screening. I would take the guys to the video store to rent a video for a date, and I would say, let's rent The Birdcage or Crying Game, which in the 80s were big gay movies or there's gay themes. And I would see how they would react.
She put her husband to the test, and he passed without question. They now live in Minneapolis and have two children of their own, ages 6 and 9. Her father has remarried to the man he has lived with for 27 years. Julie says her young ones think it's perfectly natural to have two grandpas on their mother's side of the family. In Des Moines, I'm Rob Dillard, Iowa Public Radio News.
Just a few of the highlights from the Being Gay in Iowa series by Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. You can hear all five installments of the series
by going to our website, iowapublicradio.org, and finding it there under the River to River section. Iowa Public Radio's Rob Diller joins me now live in the studio. Hi, Rob.
Good afternoon, Ben.
This is another wonderful installment in this series. We've looked at veterans, disabled people, Latinos, African Americans in Iowa. And it's worth mentioning that the whole point of Iowa Public Radio's Being in Iowa series is to shed some light on the experience of minority groups in the state and also so that we can better understand that experience. Tell us, in this particular instance, when you looked at being gay in Iowa, what were your chief goals?
Well, I started by asking some trusted friends about what themes I should pursue in this series. My goal, of course, was to give voice to another group that make up the population of Iowa, a small segment of the population, but I wanted to give people a chance to, in their own words, describe what it's like to be gay in Iowa. I started, of course, with the issue of same-sex marriage. If you're going to look at this question of issues surrounding gays in the state, you start there because it's still a very controversial topic and open for a lot of discussion from different points of view. So I went with marriage as the kind of the way to get the series going. First thing a colleague of mine said when I mentioned I was going to be doing this, she said, well, you're going to look at different approaches or attitudes taken by various religions, right? And I said, well, of course, I think I need to do that. So we looked at religions. The issue of coming out is something that many gay people go through. And so I thought that would touch a lot of hearts, and it did. I got some incredible response to that segment this week. Bullying, of course, there's some great initiatives in the state addressing areas of bullying, so I wanted to make sure I touched on that. And then from the moment I saw Zach Walls, a young man, testify before the Iowa House last year about being raised the son of lesbians, I knew I had to touch on the children of gay couples. So that's sort of how I went about developing the series.
Any unexpected challenges you run into in putting together the series?
I have to say no, Ben. With all of these series and this Being in Iowa stories that I've been doing for the last year and will continue doing for the next year, I am so grateful for people being willing to tell me their stories. And my goal, of course, is to get out of their way and let them tell those stories. And so every person I approached to be part of this series said yes, they would be. And So I'm very grateful for that.
Wonderful job, as always. Rob Dillard, being gay in Iowa, you can hear the entire series if you didn't catch it during this week by going to iowapublicradio.org. Rob, thanks, and we'll look forward to your next Being in Iowa installment when you explore, I understand, being homeschooled in Iowa.
That's right, Ben.
Rob Dillard, thanks. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio, and we're focusing as we wrap up this week of this series, Being Gay in Iowa. We're going to continue that discussion this hour, and perhaps you'd like to join our conversation with your reaction to this series or something you heard in the series. Please join us in this conversation, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, and you can tweet us. IPR Talk is how you can tweet us. Joining me for the rest of the hour, we have four people with unique perspectives on being gay in Iowa. Joining us in our Des Moines studio, Rich Eichner. He's a Des Moines businessman, a gay rights activist, also a former Republican congressional candidate. Rich, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, Ben. It's good to be here.
Also with Rich in the studio, Sharon Malero, a Des Moines attorney, also chair of the board of directors of One Iowa. Sharon, welcome to you.
Good morning, Ben.
Good afternoon to you. Nate Monson in our studio as well, executive director of Iowa Safe Schools. Nate, welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us from our Iowa City studio, Kate Varnum, one of the plaintiffs in Varnum v. Breen. This was the Iowa Supreme Court case which paved the way for same-sex marriage in Iowa. Once again, our listeners are welcome to join our conversation with questions for our guests. Also, we'd like to hear from you this hour, especially if you are gay or lesbian. You have an experience to share, perhaps an incident, a conversation, a moment with a family member or a friend that will help us all understand a little bit better what it's like being gay in Iowa. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Kate Varnum, I'd like to start with you. It's been nearly 3 years since the historic decision that paved the way for same-sex marriage in Iowa. Iowa still only one of a handful of states that do allow same-sex marriage. I'm wondering how often in your daily life in the past 3 years you are reminded that you are at the center of a historic case in Iowa.
You know, it's really interesting, Ben, to hear people talk about the case and talk about the Varnum decision. This is the name that, of course, my childhood name, and it's hard to equate that with this is my life, this is who I am, and the Varnum decision as being this entity outside of our lives.
Mm-hmm. And so reaction when people do find out that you are Kate Varnum of this decision?
You know, the reaction that we get has always been very positive. So they're always very surprised to say, oh, yeah, I do know those people. And, gosh, this does affect people that I care about.
Rich Eichner, let me turn to you and ask you, in the nearly 3 years since that decision, have you seen a change in Iowa in the environment for gays and lesbians?
Well, of course. I think you get both sides of the situation. You have people reacting negatively to the decision, but you have many more people reacting positively to the decision. To see state elected officials attending same-sex marriages in churches in Des Moines, for example, is a wonderful experience. You know you're changing hearts and minds when people recognize that they know somebody who's gay, they care about people who are gay and lesbian, and they want to protect their families. And I think every Iowan can identify with that. I don't know anyone who doesn't want to protect their family, their spouse, their children, their homestead, their employment, their pension, and all they have the same, you know, fair tax rates and things of that nature. So the issues are all the same. It's just, are we including everybody, or are we saying that we have privileged people who get all the privileges, and then we have unprivileged people who pay bills and don't get the same quality of life?
Rich, you are also a lay minister in the United Methodist Church, I understand.
Former. I was a lay minister when I was 19 years old and had two churches in East Central Illinois and lived in a town of 400 people and conducted services every week for 2 years and then went to seminary for a year and a half before dropping out when the Methodist Church started becoming anti-gay.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, during the series, this is one of the aspects that Rob Dillard touched on, was that members of various faith communities approach questions surrounding gay lifestyles from widely different perspectives. Some church leaders are quite vocal in protesting the Supreme Court decision that allowed same-sex couples to marriage. Others were the first clergy to lead marriage ceremonies for gays and lesbians. What are your thoughts, Rich, when you hear Scripture quoted on this issue?
Well, people use Scripture very selectively. If you really believe in Scripture, you wouldn't eat pork, you wouldn't play with a football, you wouldn't do lots of other things. You'd have multiple female spouses if you were male. There would be all kinds of things you would do. You would marry your husband's wife if your brother died. There are all kinds of prescriptions in the old, particularly in the Old Testament, that are routinely ignored. When you hear people talking about they want to protect this or they want to protect that, they're so selective. It's hard to have a rational conversation with somebody who's not informed on their source material.
Mm-hmm. When I ask a lot of the questions or we discuss this hour, feel free for anyone, Nate, Sharon, and Kate, and of course, Rich, to jump in on these. Sharon, your views on that, because faith is often used in this debate.
One of the things that frustrates me in this dialogue is that people often believe that being gay means you are not a person of faith. And I think that the gay community has a huge membership that are people of faith, and that the argument is the church shouldn't be required to marry you. And I think my counter argument back is, why would I want to get married in a church that doesn't welcome me? There are plenty of churches that are open and welcoming, It's great to see the gay and lesbian community engaging in faith activities.
It was pointed out in the series that churches are often forced to take sides on this issue. How do you see this debate developing in the faith community as a whole? Let's go back to Rich.
How do I see it developing? Well, I mean, the trends are all very obvious. More and more people support same-sex marriage each year. the fear that was drummed so vividly into Iowans' minds and everywhere else across the country just falls away because it's unsubstantiated. There's no evidence of all the terrible things happening. You'd think the earth had blown up or something by now if you would listen to the rhetoric from 3 or 4 years ago. So all of the fears and hate mongering are empty. People see they're empty. They discard them. They see their neighbors and friends and coworkers who are in very successful and positive and uplifting same-sex relationships and are happy with their lives. And people, in many cases, people who have been very unhappy because they've been having to live in a closet or not been able to express themselves openly and freely, who then do so. And they relax and they settle down and they're productive and they're more creative at work. And it's hard to look at those kinds of pictures and not say that this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, I believe you have an interesting connection that involves faith, an interesting story. Do you have an uncle who is an evangelical minister?
I do. I have an uncle who's an evangelical minister in Florida, and recently have spent quite a bit of time talking to him about my faith. And he is very open and accepting of me and my spouse, considers her to be a niece as well. And he has started doing an outreach at his church in Florida to gay and lesbians in his community. And I've told him over time, I said, you are excluding a huge population from your church, and they are the people who really need the ministering. They need to be involved. And so, if you need to grow your church, you might as well look toward them. So,
mm-hmm. Nate Monson, executive director of Iowa Safe Schools. We certainly want to talk about the atmosphere in schools, how that's been changing. But anything to say on this faith issue, where the intersection is?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. What we do is we travel around the state and are offering professional development for schools and trainings for them. And it's always interesting how a lot of different places they have. Around the state, we've had issues where some communities, one faith community kind of dominates the community and they don't want the school to have professional development, anti-bullying efforts, things like that, versus some parts of the state where we've come to communities where the faith communities who initiated the training. So it's kind of Iowa's just a really interesting place because it depends on the community you're at. But we've gotten a lot of positive feedback mm-hmm. from faith communities on the issue of bullying, harassment, those kinds of things that impact youth.
Okay. Nate, do go on about that. Tell us let's take this time frame, the nearly 3 years since the Varnum decision or the last 5 years, whatever you want to take as a time frame here. Tell us what progress has been made to get schools safer for gay, lesbian students.
Well, when the decision first came down, we had a presentation scheduled in the western part of the state. And it was kind of interesting because as the decision came down, we had this scheduled. It was going to be a great class. Everything was going fine. And then a group of, let's just call them not nice people, got a hold of what we were going to do. And they were sending out press releases saying it was a Brokeback Mountain training and all these other really graphic, horrible things. But at the same time, then the people in the class and the school districts we worked with to put that together, they were very supportive. So it was kind of like these outliers that were trying to cause problems. But since the decision, I've noticed, people really want that information, what they can do to support the kids. Mm-hmm. It's becoming a lot more open than I think it was 3 years ago.
Remind us, Nate, what are the laws that exist in Iowa that pre-existed this or have been introduced since to protect children?
Well, in 2007, the Safe Schools Law was passed, which is an anti-bullying bill that protects 17 perceived or actual characteristics, and sexual orientation and gender identity are included in those 17. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to be LGBT, but getting called names like fag or fairy, those are protected now when it comes to bullying and harassment.
And there are different levels of bullying. What are they?
Well, you know, bullying, it's kind of interesting because, you know, it can go from the cyberbullying kind of situation, which is a real serious problem because children oftentimes will re-victimize themselves, you know, where if you're just getting bullied, walking down the hall, get called a name, you can escape that and go home. But with cyberbullying, if there's a video made or a picture that's online, oftentimes the student who it's directed to will constantly relook at it or be reminded of it. And so it's this re-victimization that constantly happens. So, you know, there's that simple name calling, and that cyberbullying is a real serious issue that has been creeping up more and more, I think.
I believe you can tell us an interesting anecdote about an Al-Qaeda wrestling coach stepping up to do something about this.
Yeah, we go all over the state, and especially really small rural communities that I find some of the best people. And I was up in Al-Qaeda just a couple years ago, and I was doing a presentation, LGBT 101, this is what gay means, this is what lesbian means, this is how we support these students. And doing the presentation, in the back of the room, this wrestling coach stood up, and he was this big, beefy guy. And I thought, you know, you never know in rural Iowa what, you know, kind of get a little nervous there. And he just said, you know, my dad is gay, and I was made fun of due to this. You know, I'm straight, but I was constantly teased and made fun of, and this is a serious issue for me. And when he said that, I think the entire room, I mean, there was no one who wasn't on the side of, we got to protect these kids, and this is an important issue. Because those wrestling coaches and those coaches, they run some of these small towns and these school districts. And to have that ally there was huge. And he's helped out with some panels and things we've done over at the AEA there in Al-Qaeda. And his dad was there for one of them. It was pretty powerful to have his dad talking about that experience and the wrestling coach there also talking about it.
Nate Munson, can you tell us what you still think needs to happen in Iowa schools yet? Laws or just the enforcement of laws across the board?
Well, a law is only as good as the paper it's written on. It's got to be that enforcement piece. And in Iowa, we do have a law in place, but some of the issues are some districts aren't reporting their numbers. There could be, you know, a lot of districts have reported nothing over the I believe 4 years since the law took effect. Mm-hmm. And
what do you think is behind that non-reporting?
I think there's a number of different things going on. It could be something as simple as you have a new administrator and they're just not aware of the law. Or there are some cases where I've heard directly from administrators who say, well, boys will be boys. And that's a problem. And so there's that mentality that's out there of boys will be boys, or that's not reportable. Or people sometimes get nervous. They don't want to look like they're the bad school. And I think we have a lot of great people out there. I think 95% of people are going to, you know, care. The administrators, they want to do the right thing. But oftentimes they just don't know, or there could be politics in town, you know, impeding that progress.
Mm-hmm. And that's the point of you crisscrossing the state with these presentations, to raise awareness about these changing attitudes.
Yeah, it's to raise awareness about all those kinds of issues that are impacting LGBT youth, especially bullying, and to give those educators some tools, resources. How do you intervene? How do you support these kids? You know, what kind of curriculum you can use in the classroom? Because that's what's shown to reduce bullying and harassment is curriculum, library books, those kinds of things. And that's what needs to be implemented more.
Nate Munson is with us, Executive Director of Iowa Safe Schools. We'll be back after a short break with Nate and the rest of our guests, Kate Varnum, Sharon Malero, and Rich Eichner. If you'd like to join our conversation, perhaps you have a story that illustrates, helps us understand the experience of being gay in Iowa, or perhaps you have a question for one of our guests today. 1-866-780-9100. rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. When we come back, more of our conversation to wrap up this week-long series by Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard, Being Gay in Iowa. We'd like your thoughts. 1-866-780-9100. Back in just a few minutes with more of River to River.
Support comes from MidAmerican Energy.
So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and on this day we're wrapping up our discussion on the heels of the series Being Gay in Iowa by Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard, where he offered many facets of this minority group, which is the whole point of the Being in Iowa series, to understand groups that we may not understand and wish to understand better, looking at coming out in the gay community, same-sex marriage, the children of gay parents, the focus of the piece that ran this morning by Rob. And we have four guests with us in this hour-long discussion to talk about some of those issues and some other issues. We'd like you to join our conversation if you have an experience to share that illustrates what it's like to be gay in Iowa. Perhaps one of your parents is gay and you'd like to join in with the conversation with an experience there. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter. Tweet us at IPR Talk. To remind you, our guests, Rich Eichner, Des Moines businessman, gay rights activist, also a former Republican congressional candidate, Sharon Malero, a Des Moines attorney, also chair of the board of directors of One Iowa, Nate Munson, executive director of Iowa Safe Schools, and Kate Varnum, one of the plaintiffs in the Varnum, Iowa Supreme Court case, which paved the way for same-sex marriage in Iowa. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to our phones. Nate has been waiting quite a while in Iowa City. Thank you for waiting, Nate. What's on your mind?
Hi. First, I want to commend this incredible panel. I want to thank them for all that they have done for our community. I know some of them personally, and I'm very, very thankful and appreciative to know them. And I also want to thank Iowa Public Radio for this incredible series. Recently, in the most recent issue of the Rolling Stone, there is an article about the Anoka Hennepin School District and how in the last year they've had 9 suicides, 4 of them being LGBT-related. And a large part of that is that in that school district, the teachers were not even allowed to address gay issues. They were expected to be neutral. And I'm just very, very thankful that in our state, that is not the case. And we have people like the members of this panel who are fighting every day to make sure that we can continue to diminish those terrible, terrible deaths that happen because people are afraid to be who they are or don't know that, you know, as it's been said many, many times, it does get better. So I just wanted to commend Iowa Public Radio and this panel, and thank you very much.
Nate, thank you for joining us from Iowa City. Let's skip over to Des Moines. Carol is with us. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm a retired school teacher. I was a librarian as well and had quite a discussion with the LGBT group at our school about how to help the students who were questioning and who wanted to find themselves in a book, how to identify those books in the library. This is more kind of a question to Nate. We went round and round. We talked about putting rainbows on the books. We talked about having them in a special section. But all in all, they said the person who's questioning or who is concerned doesn't want to be walking around with that kind of a book. How do we communicate to the kids that those books are available and they can find themselves in books?
Interesting question, Carol. Let's do put that to Nate Munson.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. You know, you don't want something that's a big rainbow sticker like the gay section of a library because kids who are questioning or maybe have some issues with it and want to learn more, they're probably not going to check out books in that area. But there are a number of different books that have LGBT characters and issues in them, and it's not necessarily like an LGBT totally themed book. I know one of the books that's on one of the most banned books in America list pretty much every year is Perks of Being a Wallflower. And that's a great book on the high school level because it talks about a lot of different high school issues, including substance abuse. There's a gay character and gay relationship in there. They talk about all sorts of, you know, just being a wallflower in a school and that impact it has on a student. So there's different books like that that are available. And I always recommend that people go to like Amazon.com has like a book list, many different LGBT book lists that are available. You could also kind of talk about if you have like a GSA or Gay Straight Alliance at the school or a diversity club or something, there are ways that maybe they could help promote the book or that these books are available in the library.
Okay. To that question put to us by Carol in Des Moines, Rich, Sharon, or Kate, want to jump in with a thought?
This is Sharon. I think one of the other issues that's available today that wasn't available during my coming out years and my generation is the internet. And you can be all alone on the internet and do all kinds of research on the internet without anybody finding out. So I think making sure students know the internet is available and where to go for good information. And Nate probably would know probably the sites to go to, but using the internet to go through the coming out process is, I think, very comforting for some people today.
And sites offhand, Nate?
Yeah, there's a number of different organizations like GLSEN, GLSEN.org, has a number of different resources and information. I know there are a number of different national LGBT groups that are out there, like the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. So I think it's just the taskforce.org.
And also, what about information for parents coming to terms with a child who seems to be gay?
PFLAG is the best group, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and their website is just PFLAG. PFLAG.org. And you can look up local affiliates. There's a number of local affiliates in the state of Iowa that are very active and do a lot of different events and support groups.
Okay, join our conversation. Being gay in Iowa, our topic today on River to River. Maggie is joining us from Des Moines. Hi, Maggie.
Hello.
Hi, Maggie. Do you have a question or a story to share?
Actually, more of a story. I was happy to marry my wife about a year and a half ago and relocate here to the Des Moines area. And she previously had 6 children before we got married, and we've become, you know, a very happy family. They had been attending a small private Catholic school in the Des Moines area for 5 years more, and immediately my wife was called in by the Monsignor and asked to remove herself from the school board, which she had served as president of for several years, donating lots of time. And that was the beginning, unfortunately, of the end of the relationship with this really nice, wonderful small school because of the realities of the teachings of the Catholic Church. And eventually our children were sort of encouraged to not attend.
How did you explain that to the children, you and your wife?
Well, it was terrible. It was really awful because these were people they loved and who they'd been with for years, and we had a very sad moment, all of us sitting on a king-size bed with, you know, 5 of the 6 children weeping, just crying and crying that they couldn't go back to their normal school with all the kids they knew and the teachers they loved. And it wasn't easy, but we felt like we had to tell them the truth and explain what the teachings of the church were and that, you know, they were abiding strictly by what they taught, but that it meant that they couldn't accept us as a family and that they didn't want us to be there.
Maggie, thank you for sharing that story.
Yes.
Maggie joining us from Des Moines. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Hitching a question on to Maggie's experience there, I wonder, when you Rich, Sharon, Nate, Kate, run into opposition to same-sex marriage. Are there cases where you have fruitful disagreements, conversations about this, or is there always a wall there? Who is this speaking?
Rich.
Rich, hi.
Most often, I mean, you have to realize, if you go back to when I came out in 1978, virtually the whole country was anti-gay. So where do we find recruits? We find recruits among anti-gay people or people who are uninformed. But you can tell pretty quickly as to whether someone is interested in dialogue or whether they're interested in simply evangelizing their particular viewpoint. If you have somebody who's willing to talk about it, you can make good progress. And it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in a day. It doesn't happen in a week. It doesn't happen in a month. It could be years. When I came out to my parents, it took them 2 or 3 years to come around. And just to use them as an example, their 70th wedding anniversary would be Monday. They're both deceased at this point. But after having a couple rocky years as they got going, they are now being commemorated with the dedication of a conference room at the National PFLAG offices in Washington on Monday. And that's just an example of how far people can come in their relationships. And you often see that in PFLAG families. The parents have had trouble adjusting to their own child. The child moves off. The parents keep learning, keep processing, and become some of the fiercest advocates for the neighbor kid or the kid down the street or the kids in the local school system. Mm-hmm. Everyone started in this country being anti-gay, with a few exceptions in the last 40 years. And now you're up to a point where 55% or so of the people believe in same-sex marriage, and about 80% of the country believes there should not be an employment discrimination against lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and gay people. And so that's the trend. And the people who are fighting that trend know they're losing the battle. And part of why they're trying to do constitutional amendments and things is to try to delay the inevitable consequence. When Loving versus Virginia was decided to overrule interracial marriages or to legalize interracial marriages all over the country, 67% of the people opposed that decision. Today it's 3-5%. So, and the same thing will happen here.
Mm-hmm. Rich Eichner, you are also a former congressional candidate in the Republican Party. Politicians who oppose same-sex marriage will often use that argument that the will of the people should decide this issue, not what they call activist judges. So why not let there be a referendum in Iowa?
Well, the question is, the will of the people changes over time. And the question becomes, in political process, when do you draw the line in the sand? If we drew the line in the sand in terms of marriages, in 2,000 years ago, you could have 6, 7, 8, 10 wives if you were male. So the question is, your political process has to be fair to everybody. You don't have to agree with each other. I mean, there are certainly religious groups that I very much disagree with, but I would not expect them to be forced to abandon their personal beliefs because I disagree with them. And the same way, I don't expect them to try to ban me from being able to live my life as I choose fit. Rich, that's the whole nature of a free country.
And Rich, as a former Republican congressional candidate, do you see the Republican Party as a party where most of the opposition to same-sex marriage is coming from? Do you see it changing, becoming more tolerant?
Well, yes and no. I mean, what's happened since 1984 when I was a candidate is the Republican Party has become much more right-wing and reactionary. And I think as a result, a lot of people who were moderates in the Republican Party have become independents or have become Democrats. And so I think the Republican Party has lost a lot in that process. But even among evangelical people, as Sharon's example pointed out earlier, there are a lot of evangelical people who are very supportive of same-sex relationships and same-sex non-discrimination policies. And I think that's the thing to focus on. The Republican Party essentially is using social conservatives to elect, economic conservatives to office. And that relationship, I think, is crumbling. And over the next election cycle or two, I think you'll see it totally collapse.
We have an email from Laura. Laura writes, please ask your panel to address Governor Branstad's request to remove his office's name from the Governor's Conference on LGBT Youth. Nate, can I throw that to you at least initially? Others can, of course, give a reaction as well.
Yeah, the governor never requested that. We actually received a letter from the governor's office this week where he sent – it was a personal letter to us, to Iowa Safe Schools and to me, about how he supports the conference's mission. He supports the work that we're doing. He does not oppose the use of the term governor being on there, and he wishes us the best conference and in all future events as well.
Okay, so we want to set that straight. Nate Munson, can you tell us about some of the controversy surrounding this conference, when it is, and remind us of that for those who haven't heard?
Yeah, well, it's March 8th at Drake University's Olmsted Center, and they can register by going to just iowasafeschools.org. And Jay Rodriguez, who is the former culture guru on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, is our keynote speaker, so we have a celebrity there. And we have over 500 attendees last year. People from 90 Iowa communities were there last year, and we're expecting around the same this year. It's really a conference that focuses on all those issues impacting youth. So on bullying, on homelessness, on sexual assault, all these different things where LGBT youth are more at risk for than heterosexual youth. And so we hope to kind of empower students and adults with information. In terms of the controversy, it was just something the family leader sent out that was not verified by the governor's office. And the governor's office and us had been working together on a letter support from the governor for the event. And he is unable to make it due to a scheduling conflict. But they were well aware of the conference in advance.
Okay. I want to make sure we get to another aspect that involves two of our guests, Sharon Malero. You work as an attorney in Des Moines. And part of what you do in your practice involves adoption, and that adoption can involve same-sex couples. So what are the challenges of same-sex couples facing adoption that straight couples may not have?
Well, most of the time in a heterosexual couple, there wouldn't be the need for an adoption. a lot of times in Iowa, there's a legal presumption of parenthood between two people who are married. And recently we've had to litigate whether a married couple who had a baby during their marriage could have both of their names on the birth certificate. The Department of Vital Statistics has taken the position that it would not be appropriate for two women to be listed on the birth certificate, meaning then that they would have to adopt the baby. The adoption process can cost anywhere between $600 to $2,500 because you might have to get a social worker to come in and do a home study. So there is a challenge in having to do that. In the case that I'm talking about, the Gartner case, the district court said that it was inappropriate to not put both women's names on the birth certificate. However, we just found out this week that the department is going to appeal that decision. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a time when straight and gay couples will be treated equally in this sense?
Well, once this issue gets to the Supreme Court, I think we'll get it clear because, in my opinion, the Varnum decision includes all aspects of being married, whether it includes children, whether it includes divorce, or whatever, not just the right to marry, but the right to have a family and be treated equally as a married couple as a heterosexual couple would be treated.
Kate Varnum, I understand you and your wife, Trish, are in the process of adopting. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have a son who is 3 months old, and he is being adopted through private adoption. He was born in Texas, so we had to deal with some issues in Texas. The judge down there made some comments during a termination hearing in December that gave us pause that we don't think that we would have had that issue in Iowa.
For instance?
One comment he made is, what happens when you divorce? He made that comment not only to us but to our attorney in Texas. And it wasn't a question of if you divorce. It was more of a question of when you divorce. We made the comment, gosh, you know, we worked really hard to get married. I don't think that that's going to be happening. Of course, he doesn't know us from anybody else. He doesn't know our involvement in the case here in Iowa, so he didn't know what we would have what we've gone through. He also made a comment to us, my son had a friend who was biracial, and he had a stigma attached to him. How are you going to deal with the stigma attached to your son? And Trish wanted to make a comment saying that, you know, here in Iowa, in eastern Iowa, we're not quite as small town, as small-minded as some places in Texas are. But she was very, very gracious and said, I think you would find in Iowa that people are a little bit more open-minded. We understand that our child is going to be different because he has two mothers, but I believe that we can handle that. I think that once we are able to finalize in Iowa, we won't have issues like that.
Let's go back to the phones to finish up our hour. Dave is with us from Iowa City. Hi, Dave. Quickly, not much time.
Okay. I've been in Iowa for 4 years now, and this is a great place to live, very progressive. I'm teaching Sunday school, and I have had, over the past few years, 4 kids from 3 different same-sex parent families. And the parents are great. They're great parents. And the kids are great kids. Another thing.
May I ask first where you came from out of state?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
From where?
From Indiana.
And the comparison there, Indiana to Iowa, you notice a difference?
Oh, incredible. Yes. And it's great that people can do these things and be open.
You had another point or not, Dave?
Yes, I did. I was I'm a retired senior Army National Guard commander. And myself and others totally disregarded the witch hunt of don't ask, don't tell. It's great that it's gone because now we don't have to worry about losing key soldiers and leaders. You know, not everybody in the military has closed minds. You know, we may be straight, but we're not narrow-minded.
Dave, we'll let you have the last word today as we've run out of time. Dave, joining us from Iowa City. Thanks to you, Dave, and to all the other callers, emailers who joined us this hour. Of course, we want to thank our guests for the full hour. Rich Eichner was with us, Sharon Malero, Nate Monson, and Kate Varnum. It's been a great pleasure to have you on to reflect on these issues. Being Gay in Iowa, a wrap-up conversation to end the series by Rob Dillard here on Iowa Public Radio. Thank you for all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
The River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Des Moines, help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. Also, a reminder, if you didn't catch all of those that five-part series by Rob Dillard, do go to iowapublicradio.org. You can hear them all online. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.